RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Let's have our political panel now, our political agenda program on RCR for this Friday morning, the 11th of October. And joining us on the panel this morning is Elliot Igile, back on RCR, because we chatted not too long ago, Elliot, didn't we?
That's right, that's right. No, good morning, Paul. Good morning to your listeners. Good morning, everyone.
Helen Houghton is in with us again this week, the leader of the New Conservative Party. Helen, welcome back. Good to have you. I bet you didn't think you were coming back this quick, right? Like, whoa, I'm back already.
No, I'm pretty sure I was here last week, so it's good to be back on again. Thank you for inviting me. Great to be here.
And Simon O'Connor. Thank you, Helen. And Simon O'Connor, the host of Speak Free, a bit later on after this program. Hi, Simon. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I find this is an excellent and appropriate warm-up before I get in the chair after your good self.
Well, I'm glad it serves a purpose. And it's free. Well, it costs you a bit of time. And you have to get your green screen out, right? That's the other thing.
Just for you, that's right. I mean, who gets out a green screen for radio?
Well, you do. You do. And it's looking great. Listeners, it's looking great. All right, plenty to talk about. October 7th. As the first anniversary has come and gone this week, it was Monday our time, Tuesday their time. Elliot, do you want to kick off the panel?
Yeah.
What did you make absolutely. Of that anniversary and what has happened in that time, in that year?
Well, so, of course, 1 year ago on October the 7th, we were all very horrified to see the absolute slaughtering of Jews in the Israeli area, and Hamas were very clever and very brutal and ruthless in that. And I've watched video clips both from the Israeli side as well as from the Hamas side. And it's quite horrific what's going on there. Now, after that, what we saw was quite shocking in that across Western civilization, we saw a lot of people basically standing up for Hamas and using words such as the Infitara call as well as genocidal calls such as from the river to the sea. And these affected in New Zealand. Academics and very much the children were being used. And we even saw our political leaders engaging in such horrific quotes and quips. What was good, at least, was that on the anniversary, Mr. Luxon and Mr. Peters did come out and they did call. They were saying, New Zealand was horrified by the monstrous actions of Hamas against Israel a year ago. And Mr. Peters said, Hamas terrorist attacks set in motion absolutely unacceptable cycle of violence and suffering. So what is good, at least, is that they are viewing the horrific atrocities from Hamas as a absolute negative. And I was there at the anniversary on a couple of discussion points. That was, one was with the Jewish councils and the other one was with the Brian Tamaki movement. And both times we found that Hamas supporters were still there trying to put forth their message, and it really felt as if it was over the dead bodies of the Jews who were slaughtered on that day 1 year ago.
Yeah, but there are dead bodies on the other side, many more as well.
There absolutely are. And I'm always
reminded. What about them?
Well, here's the thing. This is where I'm reminded always of that Gouda Meir quote where she said, if today Arabs put down their weapons, tomorrow there is peace. If today the Jews put down their weapons, tomorrow there is no more Israel. If Hamas give back the hostages, and if they stop trying to erase Jews from the map, then everyone can live in peace. It is as simple as that. And these horrific, tragic deaths on both sides of this equation can stop tomorrow if only Hamas stop trying to kill everyone and try to kill the Jews. It's as simple as that.
All right. Anyone else got anything to say on this one?
Yeah, well, I'll just jump in quickly. I agree with Elliot. It was good to see on the media that those leaders that acknowledge the murderous acts of Hamas. And, you know, I'll just add, there's been a lot of calls for New Zealand to do more for Palestine refugees. I just have to say, well, I question why others are not taking them in. So, you know, the likes of Jordanian and Lebanon, I mean, obviously there's been the Palestine people have caused huge trouble in those areas. As far as the protesters that are here in New Zealand, who are calling for us to free Israel to free Gaza. I mean, they should really be applauding Israel for freeing Gaza from the murderers of Hamas. Maybe one day Israel will actually free Lebanon from Hezbollah as well. But look, it is a heated topic for many, and like I said last week, you know, nobody wants war, but in war there is death, of course. And I mentioned last
week not supposed to attack civilians, though.
No, of course. But look,
military, right, is really how wars is.
Yeah,
that's the law of war.
Israel does have a responsibility to protect its people, and the reality is it often goes too far to protect the enemy by putting its own people at risk as well. So there is that. But look, all of the criticism of Israel is really just that old-fashioned, I hate to say it, but Jew hatred. You know, our politicians calling for a ceasefire are being disingenuous. And I said last week that it's very naive of the Prime Minister and Winston Peters to say that. You know, there was a ceasefire before Israel was attacked, and their enemies are never going to respect a ceasefire. So similar lines of what Elliot said, there will never be peace when Israel has terrorist neighbours who want to destroy Israel more than they want peace, I'm afraid.
Well, can I also, yeah. I sort of put in there that the Israeli army, the IDF, are actually considered the most moral army that you can have out there.
Yeah, that could be argued to be propaganda. I've heard that broken down as propaganda. Yeah,
and that's absolutely incorrect. They even have bombs which are roof stompers, which they will have the bomb that hits the roof.
Well, that's all right then.
They give warning. The fact is that Hamas are using human shields, and it's absolutely disgraceful and disgusting. But the fact is that Israel are doing whatever they can to protect their people. They are not going out there to try to cause a genocide. The problem is that Hamas is using children and women and families to put their weaponry and missiles and terror tunnels.
Netanyahu's actually a Pole, okay? So when did he arrive in the area?
About Netanyahu, there's a whole other discussion.
Well, then, are you talking about who's been in the area?
That we are utilised, but we talk about
what if Iran comes into this and it gets huge and we've got no oil? And then what happens? You're still fanboying and girling on the sidelines?
Well, I have strong criticisms of the Israeli force that left what I regard as that area open where Hamas rolled in there. So I don't really hold a
opinion. No, we're talking about Iran. Talking about Iran, the big scale, you know, where hypersonic missiles that do 6,000 miles an hour come plowing into your airspace. What happens then?
Well, war is war. You've got to defend your people.
Okay, so everyone gets killed, but you're happy. Because the principle was upheld. I'm just trying to get to the core of it because a lot at stake here.
Here's your core. The core is that Israel wants to be left alone in peace, and neighbors keep trying to kill her. That's the core of it. There's some sort of deep, pronounced thing. It's basically one side wants to exist, the other one does not want it to exist. That's at the core of it.
I'm not sure I can add a lot to this, but you know, really quickly, particularly on the October 7th side of things, I wrote about this on social media briefly, which is long and short, that's the day that we specifically remember what I would argue is a relatively unique event. And one of the things I noted was there's a bit of a propensity, Paul, to universalize events like this, to say, well, you know, we're not just going to remember the slaughter on October 7th, but all victims. And I suppose my point is that it's the day we remember what happened.
No argument with that. And we did that.
Oh, yeah,
and
no,
I did
sorry,
that.
Not arguing with you, by the way.
But it's the whataboutness, okay?
Yeah.
And the justifying of, well, you know, 30,000 kids. If only they didn't do this or only they didn't do that. Well, that doesn't help the parents of those children killed on mass scale. So, yeah, October the 7th is the date. By the way, how did they get in on paragliders? There's still unanswered questions here. Many people think that was a setup. So while that's going on, it's kind of difficult to go the full all in. But, you know, it's a tragedy all round. I take your point, and we did acknowledge that, and I do acknowledge that. But
I think
it's
ultimately,
not,
when it comes
not
to
that
the Middle
simple,
East,
though.
It's complicated. It's not simple. This is the big problem. It's, you know, it's not just about October 7th. There's been multiple attacks on Israel since it was founded in 1948, and then we can go back further than that, and back literally thousands of years. Yeah. And, you know, it's very, very difficult to untangle. One thing I would very, very quickly point out, though, is the massive contradictions that come through New Zealand. I noted a message from the Green Party in the last day or two asking that we ban, rightly actually, the Islamic regime, their Guard Corps, one of the worst terrorist organizations in the world.
You talk about
Iran. That was great. This
the
is
Revolutionary
Iran.
Guard. Yeah.
Yeah, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, something actually I've been calling for years. Yet why I say it is the paradox is the Green Party are then out with the proxies of Iran, Hezbollah and Hamas. And you're going, well, hold on, guys. We're not going to be able to address these causes if we're so contradictory.
Yeah, proxies though, Simon. Where does that come from? I was listening to Colonel Douglas McGregor just the other day, and he was saying that people who frame the Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas as proxies of Iran are wrong. They have historic origins in of themselves separate of that. So, again, you know, what's propaganda, what's real? Not trying to trip you up, but that's what people...
Oh, no.
It's so easy to say proxy.
Well, I'm an ex-chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, so it's going to be a little bit difficult to trip me on it.
Down.
But I disagree with him. I mean, whether they've got connections or not, it's their weaponry is coming through Iran, the money's coming through Iran, like the Hezbollah.
Where's the Israeli weaponry coming from?
Oh, well, that's coming from, obviously, the UK, Canada, the US, of course. But what we're saying is that you've got an autocratic, theocratic regime in Iran, which is afraid of being toppled by itself, by its own people. And yet it's supplying its weaponry, trying to destabilize the Middle East. So put really simply, one of the reasons you haven't seen Iran really get involved with this fight is they are afraid that the Iranian people will rise up against them, which is quite a big possibility.
All right. I'm just going back. I think, Helen, you mentioned Jordan. King Abdullah is hanging by a thread. He thinks that his population thinks he's betrayed them in his support or not doing much in the face of what's been happening. So you can see why he's being very cautious. If he takes a flood of Palestinians, he has to admit that there's a problem. And he could go down.
Could do.
Anyway. Why do I know? Let's get on to this. The Manawa Nui sinking. Wasn't it gutting to see one of our naval vessels, though it didn't look like a naval vessel to me, it looked like some other sort of Frankenstein-type vessel. And apparently we got it from the Norwegians, and that was designed for oil rig servicing and tendering. So that makes sense. But here it was, capsized, on fire, and ultimately sunk on a Samoan reef. Simon, being a former politician appropriating taxpayers' money, and that was over $100 million apparently. I don't know if that was a good deal or not. How'd you feel seeing that?
Oh, absolutely gutted. I've been on the Manawa Nui. I was there when it was commissioned, actually. Quite a remarkable vessel. Look, it is a naval vessel, but it's not a war-fighting vessel. So you're quite right. It's a Norwegian oil explorer. We basically painted it grey. But, you know, importantly, it was never meant to be war-fighting. But it had pretty amazing capabilities, actually, from salvage. There's actually a hole in the middle of the boat. The divers literally go in the middle of the boat. And
that's not the one that sunk it, is it?
No. Well, let's hope that they didn't close the hatch. No, look, my suspicion, Paul, and it is just speculation, is that there was something that went wrong in the engineering space, which then basically crippled the ship, and it's then crashed into the reef rather than someone turned the wrong way. But it's actually a vessel with great capabilities, or was, as I say, salvage. It was able to bring supplies in hyperbaric chambers for divers, and obviously the surveying. So quite a big loss to New Zealand's military and human assistance capabilities. So this is a big problem for the government, actually. We already have old, defunct naval ships, by and large. They were looking for money to buy some more and do replacement, and now one of the newest vessels in the fleet's 30-plus metres on the bottom of the ocean.
Is there any point in having a navy below a certain size, really?
I think for New Zealand, yes, and it's mainly actually around our support of our Pacific Island neighbours. That's what a lot of it's about. We look and support the shipping lanes. We are trying to protect where we can our and their fisheries. And then, of course, it's the disaster. You know, think after the Tongan earthquakes, a volcano. You know, it was our ships that went up there loaded with supplies. So we're not a war-fighting navy, really.
No. You mean the volcano that put 100 trillion billion tons of carbon into the atmosphere in 2 hours?
that's the one, and people are worried about planting cows here in New Zealand. Yeah.
Straws. Folks, your thoughts on the armchair captains sitting up there on their armchair bridges talking about DEI being a factor in this?
I think we have to be a bit cautious here. DEI is a severe problem in New Zealand and across the Western sphere, but we have to wait until we get some better facts. I don't think we can just jump to it being, oh, it's because it's a lesbian woman. We can't jump into that. We have to wait for facts to start coming out. I will say I've also been up close and personal with the Manawanui, and I've trained a few people who've been on that ship as well. It really is a gutting thing. We've lost a significant tool for Kiwi usage in the Pacifica environment. And we do. We really do need it. It has been of great use. It really has been. And yes, I agree with Simon. We really do need to have a Navy. You can make arguments about the other branches, but Navy for New Zealand is a coastal nation and one nation that does have a strong trade element around that Pacific. And with other forces, such as the Chinese influence growing in those areas, I think we need it more and more. So it is quite gutting, but we need to wait, I think. This is one of those times where it's not, don't jump into stuff, hold fire until we get a little bit more facts around it.
Someone suggested yesterday morning on RCR and writing in that it might have been a kitchen fire, like someone left something going on the stove. I doubt it was, but everyone has an idea.
I remember a couple of years ago, we did have the explosion in Wynyard Quarter because someone decided to leave a gas bottle on the barbecue and popped it into a ship container.
Right, okay. Yeah, weird things can happen, right?
Definitely.
But we should all hang on. Simon, what sort of transparency around any investigation into this should there be? I mean, we're not giving away military secrets necessarily here with a vessel like that, are we?
Not really. Look, there will be capabilities on any of our naval vessels that we won't want to talk about, to be the same as some of our Air Force assets as well. But there will be a lot of transparency. I think the Court of Inquiry will be very open. I think it will become relatively clear pretty quickly what did happen. And that's why that speculation around the DEI stuff is just inappropriate. But actually from both sides, you've got those who are critiquing because the captain is a woman. I see that as pretty much irrelevant. But then you've got others who are sort of the other side trying to make a big thing about who she is rather than, you know, what happened. So fundamentally, you know, on the DEI front, this is the problem with it. It reduces so much conversation down to
when you go hard on it and promote it and promote your corporate culture, the Navy, using it. And then something like this happens. Will you be prepared for the fallout, right?
Well, that's why it goes both ways. I think it's just not helpful at the moment. Once we get all the facts and that will be public, then we, you know, we'll be able to make our judgments.
Helen, got anything to say about this?
Oh, look, I agree. The DEI is a huge problem. And, you know, we could talk about that one for a whole actually, I'd hope you invite us back to have a discussion on that.
We can have a whole day on that if you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love that. Please
invite me. Break for morning tea and lunch.
But look, just for this particular story, there's not enough details and how useful that is to have that conversation right now.
Yeah, okay. All right, TVNZ restructuring. They need to save $30 million. From what I've picked up, the One News website will close down. Is that such a big deal? And people are apparently looking worried. Some went out the front door, some went out the back door at the staff meetings. I guess the ones who go out the front door still got a job. The others, well, not so good. So here's the big question. Is it time just to wind the whole thing down and be done with it and consign it to history that really government doesn't need to be in this sort of broadcasting space anymore? Their business model's over and done with. It's never probably ever going to improve. What do you think of that? What do you think of that? Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll say I think that you're absolutely right. I think that what historically you look at back at the the mainstream media in the US around the Vietnam War. You look at different nations and different historical areas. And of course, in the New Zealand context, you just look at 2020 to 2024, really. And you can see that the government has had a very strong friendship, link, relationship with the mainstream media. And that period saw a couple of things. One, which was we were able to find examples where the mainstream media have put out misinformation, and I would argue disinformation as well. And at the same time, what we saw was the public trust in media just throttled down to the lowest point that we've ever had as of the last numbers. And so I think it's fair. I think we should actually just let the whole thing burn. I'll be honest, I'm a bit of a burn guy anyway. I think that we should have let the banks burn during the GFC. But I do think that these places should not have government money pouring into them.
Well, they probably would argue that they're revenue-based through advertising, but nonetheless, it is owned by the taxpayer, and the business models kind of run its thing. So if it can't wash its face no matter what, then, what's the point, right?
I think that's part of the problem. The business models broken, my sense is even what they're about to do or proposing won't fix the solution. Yep. Similarly, as they're trying to get money off Google and Meta, that's not going to fix it either. The models.
Well, you saw what Google said, didn't you, Simon? You saw what Google said? They said, we'll disconnect you from news. Like, we said that would happen.
We did. Yeah. It's happened in Canada. And why wouldn't they? I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't like these big foreign corporates pushing us around, but, they're allowed to. They can. We have to acknowledge that. And the other thing is, particularly with those pushing for this new media bill to support the likes of TVNZ and the Herald and others, is, Google and Meta are sharing their content online, but it's often the way actually people get to the Herald. A lot of us will jump onto Google and search it. So it's sort of cutting both ways. But I think one of the important things I'd say to our listeners is, even if this, Google and Meta's do pay, that's not going to save New Zealand's media, that the model's broken, including they insult people. That's one of the bigger problems. I was talking to someone a little earlier this morning, and they were just noting that, they don't watch the news anymore because they basically get talked down to and they don't like it.
Yes, I've been in that environment before. I know what that's like. The thing is, when you sentence yourself to death, well, you've done it to yourself in the end, right? I mean, that's what they've done, isn't it?
Oh, look, I just had a bit of a giggle. Sorry, I don't know if giggle's the right word, but what Simon was saying. First off, it's just flogging a dead horse, isn't it, really? But look, just back to what Simon said about I think you said people that he talked to don't even watch the news. Can't remember exactly what you said, but I actually am quite frustrated that I can't watch a decent news program either, because it would just turn your attention back to 2 weeks in a row. I watched TV3 News, and 1 week, what's the presenter? Does anyone know the presenter on TV3 News? Can't remember her name.
The woman.
Yeah, the woman.
The one who was there before.
Yeah. What's her name?
I don't watch it, so I've got no idea.
How's that? We've already forgotten the name.
And it's important to watch just to see.
Samantha Hayes.
That's the one.
Samantha Hayes.
Samantha. What Samantha did, and I've never seen this before, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've never seen this. She invites Paddy Gower onto the program. It's news, right? It's a 6 p.m. news. Here Paddy Gower comes in to promote his book. He's there to promote his book. And at the time I was thinking, really? Is this what we actually should be doing on 6 p.m. news? But then the follow-up was a week later when she invited him back on to promote his new show, his new program. And I'm thinking, is this what we do?
Well, they're both owned. The news bulletin's made by Stuff, and Paddy Gower is now an employee of Stuff. So you can see how it works.
Yeah, but
I think they should just play endless reruns of him in the Vaxathon. That's what I want to see. I want to see back to back Vaxathon Paddy.
I love his interview with Stefan and Lauren Southern. That was a great interview.
That's a cringe one, isn't it? That's a cringe interview, isn't it?
Yeah, well, he gets rolled. They basically just hit him with facts and he just can't handle it.
I walked past him once at West Haven Marina, and he looked at me very suspiciously.
That could be from all the drugs he's been having. And I say that, you know, with honesty, because he's done a few of those, hasn't he, with the programs. But, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I never watched them, so I don't know.
I know. So you've got to know what's going on, Paul.
Okay. Well, I've got RCR now.
True.
Well, there we go.
It's all I need to know.
That's all we need as well.
Yeah. If ever I hear anyone say that's all I need to know, I say, yeah, well, whatever.
They've got to get the RCR bites, don't they, Paul? That's the way to get the news.
Exactly.
As long as you're not saying you're the one source of truth.
We are almost the one source of truth.
Well, there's some controversy for the morning.
Well, that would be a two right and a two E billboard. You know, not the one they've been getting into trouble for now. It's like one source of truth. Yeah, right. There's a good one right there. Okay. Anything more to say on the troubles of? Of course, in the background, RNZ just go, we've got the money.
Yes, they do. They very much do. Yeah. Yep, they just
will end up being TV. Just wait. Yeah, you can imagine. All right, let's move on. Helen, Fast Track projects, 149 selected by Fast Track approvals. Oh, dear. Chicken Little.
Sorry, I pulled up the other topic. Okay.
Okay, well, tell me what other topic. I'll make an edit here. What was the other topic? Oh, you want to do Jacinda cashing in?
Yeah, we'll go back to the Fast Track purely because we were just talking about the one source of truth. So I'm
okay.
Well,
no, I don't know why I didn't think of that. Okay.
Come on.
Okay.
So yeah.
I'll pick it up because it needs to sound like at least know what's going on. Okay.
All right. Ex-politicians. Okay. No,
here we go. Speaking of the one source of truth, Helen. She's doing all right. She's making the money.
That's it. That's the one, the diversity. Oh, no, sorry, I'm the wrong one there. Yeah, the ex-politicians are in high demand, apparently.
Well, she was a DEI hire, but for the leader of the country.
Yeah, well, she's cashing in on her celebrity and former role as New Zealand Prime Minister. But interestingly enough, she actually denied it initially. And, you know, the problem here is, I mean, for your listeners, they're probably aware that because this news broke on, I think it was a front page story on the Post on Saturday, Dame Jacinda Ardern, a hit on the six-figure global speaking circuit. So according to that, there were some of the world's biggest companies are thought to be spending six figures per event to hear her speak. $316,000 for one of the Asian markets. But look, you know, good on her. Go for it. I don't have any problem with people making a living. But then does she need to make a living? Because one thing I wanted to highlight is we are actually paying her a very high salary for the rest of her life.
What, as a former PM?
That's right. And the travel and all the benefits that go with that. Simon, you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong. But I just think it's quite an outrageous situation. If the ex-politicians, again, Simon, you may disagree, but if they are profiting from their position or their previous position, I would like to think that some of that money should go back to our taxpayers. What are your thoughts on that, Simon?
I'd probably disagree on a number of points. I mean, don't get me wrong, I Jacinda's destroyed this country at so many levels. At so many levels. It doesn't matter if it's from health through to the economy. So let's make that really clear. But I don't see how we can, should, or why we should stop anyone going on to another career. And politicians, to me, are no different. I better be clear to listeners, I am not being paid $300,000 plus for every show I do or anything like that. But, you know, I just don't think we can stop that. And then, you know, these groups overseas want to have her. The other is it's former prime ministers do get travel, such as flights and taxis, if it's for parliamentary work, and they don't get a pension anymore. That used to be the case. If you were in parliament for 9 years, you'd get 80% of a backbencher's wage. That stopped 20 plus years ago. So as an ex-prime minister, like Key and English, she's allowed to fly taxis if it's for an event linked to her as as PM. But look, as uncomfortable as it is that she's making a, you know, a killing after all she's done here in New Zealand, that sits badly, but I just don't think we can stop it or should.
No. Look, Simon, I'm sorry, I might have said it incorrectly. I don't think we should stop that either. But you've just told me that we're not paying her a high salary for the rest of her life?
Not that I'm aware of. The politicians don't get paid.
Nothing. Okay.
They give her security, though, don't they? That costs money.
I don't think they do that either. The DPS drops as soon as you're not the Prime Minister. You can have your superannuation scheme. So when you're a member of Parliament, like everyone else, you put your money into your KiwiSaver or wherever. But again, you don't get that until you're 65. So no, politicians don't get paid. I'm pretty sure prime ministers, though, are allowed to use Crown limousines or taxis and flights if it's linked to them having been a prime minister.
Okay.
Well, you could link anything to having been a prime minister, maybe.
Thanks for correcting me then. That was good to know.
It may be a curse having her turn up, give you your company a speech. That could be the very moment your company starts to fall to pieces. So maybe we should let her carry on.
Yeah, as long as it's not here.
Well,
it's one of the striking things, isn't it, of how, you know, what we lived through with her administration and what we know, yet overseas they think she's amazing. Mm. It's just...
Well, that's how it's been promoted, Simon. I've seen the way she's been promoted as some sort of angelic figure overseas. You see, you know, ignorant poms say, I wish she was our prime minister. Really?
Well, in New Zealand, there are still quite a few people who do regard her as a bit of a messiah, that they are still very much inculcated with that messiah narrative. I mean, I totally agree with probably everyone on this panel. I think she's been New Zealand's worst leader in our history since 1852. I think she make Muldoon look lovely and teddy bear like. But she is still
at least he had a sense of humor.
Yeah,
at least he had a sense of humor that made you laugh.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, that's a
sorry.
Yeah, beyond that, she was absolutely, yeah, she was. She was the most incompetent and at the same time competent only at damage to our people, to our systems, to our economy. I find it disgusting just hearing about her on the circuit. She can go as long as she goes away from us. As long as we keep the memory of what she has done to us, I think that would probably be the silver lining.
All right, anything more to say about that?
No, that's enough. That's enough out of, yeah.
Yeah, but how much do we owe her just for talking about her? Could someone writing an invoice right now? I want to get on to fluoride because fluoride's been big here at RCR. And it's interesting because the Director General of Health has heavied the Tauranga City Council to carry on with the setup for fluoridating the water system, even though there's a borer case that's yet to be decided. And two things now, the Cochrane Institute has pulled together a whole lot of research showing it's a neurotoxin, it's damaging. The federal case in the United States, the toxicology report that turned into a case, has the judge saying it's obvious. It's been argued that fluoride is a neurotoxin and shouldn't be in any water, yet they're going ahead with it. Who wants to make some comment on this?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. I'll be honest, I was one of those who was a bit sceptical of what groups like Fluoride Free New Zealand were saying, and I would meet up with them as well, and they'd try to argue it, but I never really gave it much attention until I dealt with some of the teams who fluoridate the water, and they were telling me that they have to wear a whole bunch of PPE and that they were getting CT scans, and now recently they've had added to that X-ray scans. So there is a expanded health monitoring of their own system. So when this case came up over in California, where amazingly the judge has said, in California, which is a Democrat environment, where he said there is little dispute that there is a statistically significant association between IQ decrements in children and fluoride concentration levels at 4 milligrams per liter. And for him to say that was amazing, considering that in New Zealand, we are over there. We're at 7. We're 7 milligrams. And
up to 1 per million.
So,
yeah.
So what are we doing to our population when even overseas they are saying that there's no dispute, there's very little dispute over it. So it is a discussion that needs to be held at the highest levels. It really is.
Yeah, and I think it's about really our health officials, the dental associations and others to actually respond to what's happening. I mean, either reassure the public that their view, which they've held consistently, is right, or begin to change it. Because I remember when I sat on the health committee years ago, the advisors, the Ministry of Health, the dental associations, all the medical people were emphatic that there was no problem at all. And that's basically why the Parliament's gone down the line it has. But as you note, there's new information coming through and they've got to front it. They've got to be able to either, well, not so much apologise, I suppose, as just say, look, we were wrong, and change the advice and change the law, or to argue their case to the contrary. But they seem to be in quite silent so far, if I'm right, Paul.
Yeah. What do you do if you're Mahi Drysdale, the mayor of Tauranga? You know you're putting poison into your water. You know that people didn't vote for you to lower their IQ, and you know that the research is sound. What do you do? What do you do?
Well, legally, he's got pretty much no options because I think it was during the National Party times that the bill was passed. I think I was there. Long and short, it basically gives the power to the DHBs, effectively through the Ministry of Health. So he's got almost no legal ability.
Yeah, but
you couldn't
let it go, could you? Even if you're legally made to do it, you can't poison people legally.
Well, I think what he could do is obviously lobbying. The other is he just draws a line and said, we're just not doing it. You basically kick up a moral stink, get the people of Tauranga on his side and say, well, if you're going to arrest us all, come and do so. In other words, use it as a campaign.
Yeah. Mm. So that would be legitimate to do that, do you think?
Well, we're allowed to protest. I'd say it would be illegal. He's under, it's a legal order to do this. But if he refuses to do it, it's civil disobedience is effectively is what he could do.
He'd be a hero.
I think he would. I actually think he would. I think he would be a hero for taking the stance. And I think it's also, now it's got backing by mainstream science institutions. I mean, one of the guys who said that they should be lowering it years ago, one of those institutes has now won one half of the 2024 Nobel Peace Prize. So there's a great deal of broad spectrum accepted mainstream approval. And I think that is something which is quite important today.
They never had any evidence. They never had any. We've found this out. We've talked a lot about this, Elliot. They never had any evidence to support the management of tooth decay argument. They never had any real evidence. It's just a sort of, how would you say it? An accepted thing lost in the murkiness of time, you know?
Yep. No, that seems right. I was going to say that this also is a very good example of this would also be the puberty blockers being done to children. Is where overseas we're seeing that nations are starting to stop it by saying that there's more damage coming out, so we need to stop it. In New Zealand, we're still one of the highest countries for highest giving to children of puberty blockers. So it really feels as if we seem to be, I'm not sure, easily controlled in terms of the institutions.
Well, I've always said we specialise in poisoning ourselves because it does seem to be that we do a lot of that with 1080 and with this and the vaxxers and the processed food. You know, we probably got it. Helen, you got anything to say about this?
Oh, well, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know what it is about human nature that we're so readily content with just going along with doing what you're told, or maybe it's just the rebel in me. But no, I think it's more than that. I mean, I'm quite health conscious and, you know, like yourself, Paul, and a lot of the people that I've met through RCR, there's a lot of health conscious people. And, you know, part of this party that I'm leading, the New Conservative, we're all about personal responsibility. And I was just talking recently in our board about that and about how, you know, it's up to us to pull our own socks up and, you know, pull our fingers out and choose a healthy lifestyle, right, instead of relying on everybody else to pay for at the other end of the scale to deal with all of our bad health choices. And so, you know, I look back to, I think you're talking about the legal or the moral side of it as one, but it's also the legal side with the borer. I mean, you know, let's target that small community where there are the issues instead of why do we dose everybody when there's a small few that have the issue? It says in the article, everyone with their own teeth benefits from having fluoride in the water. Well, I'm sure that your audience are probably already over this, but I would just encourage them, if they haven't, and others listening and, you know, sharing the information, to look at the research so that they equip themselves with, you know, instead of listening to what others tell you, what they think is good for us, just be equipped. And that's obviously what RCR is all about as well, with a lot of the information you've already brought. So, yeah, I would just, you know, agree with that kind of, you know, be critical thinkers and actually look at all sides of everything, really. When it comes to our own health, I'm all about autonomy, and health, healthy body, healthy mind, all of that stuff. So, but along with that is the freedom to choose, not be forced to drink something with poison.
Well, it's the fact that it's in the water, right? I mean,
Yep.
And the other thing is, I believe, hopefully we'll be talking with Mahi shortly, but I believe it's illegal, or could be illegal, to provide a non-fluoridated source of water, like a tap or something, so people can go and fill up from there.
Closed down? We've got some natural spring taps down in Christchurch, and they've been closed off over the last year. So, yeah, that could be why. But look, just as a little bit of encouragement, and I can't mention names, but there is a professor at the university who is, speaking around this as well, as far as Bora goes. And so, yeah, the conversation's still happening. It's not the end of the story just yet.
Okay. Government unveils, we've got about 10 minutes left, 149 projects selected by Fast Track Approvals Bill, and Christopher Bishop, who's also, I see, been active in the sport and recreation area, asking Sport NZ to review update transgender inclusion principles. And I think there are a few people out there who can take credit for that. But back to this story, Christopher Bishop is saying that these projects will help rebuild the economy, fix the housing crisis, improve energy security, and address the country's infrastructure deficit. Simple. Simple. It's solved right there, do you think? Do we need this?
If only. Oh, look, I mean, I'm biased, of course, with my political background, but I overall think it's a good thing. We need to actually get more infrastructure and faster. I mean, how many of us comment of how long, you know, roads take to build and forever orange road cones, and you compare to what other countries are doing? So all of that's good. The devil, though, becomes in the detail at least two levels. One, of course, is where's the money? So it's all easy for any government to message and say, hey, we're going to do this. But the devil's in the detail of when and how. And the other is actually around the choices. The process is being circumvented, and that means that ministers are making a lot more of the decisions. And so to what extent are they being influenced by lobbying and so forth? Now, there's always going to be elements of that. That's how our political system works, Paul. But, you know, we don't want to see any... Well, sort of forgot my English for a second, but basically doing just because it's your mate. We don't want to see any of that going on. And so there's a risk there. So time will tell, but overall I think it's a good thing.
All right. Elliot?
Yeah, I agree. I think that overall it's a good thing, and I agree as well that the devil is in the detail. I think that the politicians will be very, very focused upon, so I don't think there's too much room for that sneaky lobbying element to get in there. That said, the negatives that I have is more around some of the racial stuff. So there's a suggestion there that you're going to have quota elements, which is that you're going to have certain iwi will have rights to perhaps not veto, but to push in there and have their what they're saying to be heard of. And that's where we get some of the current issues, for example, the Taniwha tax, and when they're ring fencing and changing programs due to what they call as protected sites. So I think overall it is good, but there is a lot of detail that needs to be cleaned of some of the the gravy train stuff that's already been put in.
Yeah, well, yeah. We have to be part of these expert panels. So that's an automatic potential issue there. But yeah, where's the money? that's the big question.
In the end,
where's the money?
Yep. Helen, anything to say about that issue?
Along with Simon and Elliot, I agree the potential for this is good, but, you know, there's always that concern open for corruption. And Simon mentioned, you know, that these are handpicked projects from government ministers. And, like, it was good to see Shane Jones had said, you know, he was stepping out of the project, but there's still select independent panel, but then that panel's been appointed by the government anyway. You know, I mean, I know that we'd all be shouting if the other government was doing this, so there still has to be that concern. You know, they've said that, well, for example, instead of fixing the resource management issue, because they've said it's non-fit for purpose, but I remember that, 4 years ago they were saying that, and instead of actually fixing the resource management issue, they did say they're going to look at it, but it's been over 40 years. Could they not look at it before now? It's a bit like, you know, certain people, certain ministers of parliament who've been in politics for 40 years and now they're going to do something. It's like, well, what have you been doing for the last 40 years? Don't you get fed up with hearing it? I mean, yeah. Well,
the RMA is a monolithic piece. That's,
Scrap it.
900 plus pages or something, isn't it? I mean, fundamentally, that's one of the counterpoints to the fast-track legislation is actually, why do we not have a regime that allows projects to move swiftly? Yeah, protect the environment, taking in all the considerations, but if you're going to fast-track some, well, why not have a system that allows all?
Oh, just one other point too, though. Did you notice, the media are all over it. I mean, slamming, you know.
Oh, no, Labour. That's Labour.
They didn't do it the last government, though. You know what I mean? How often do they slam the last government over anything? Yeah.
They'll all be, with the business model falling to pieces, it won't probably happen for too much longer, all that sort of carry on and comment, because they'll all be only a few of them left in the office, you know. Maybe. All right, just to finish up on, anyone got anything to say about the official cash rate dropping 50 basis points, 4.75? Does this really mean anything? There's a lag time in what people have signed up for and the changes in these rates. Apparently the banks put a lot of pressure on the Reserve Bank. Does this just maintain, you know, some sort of housing market in the meantime and people don't fall into too much negative equity potentially? What do you think it all means?
I think it's a good thing, because I'm going to have to run in a moment. So my final words are the OCR coming down is a good thing. I mean, not so much if you've got savings in the bank, but in terms of people being able to purchase houses and so forth. Mm. So it coming down is good, but it does not mean that our economy is in good shape either. That's the paradox in this. But yeah. OCR is coming down. Good.
Been painted as kind of rosy in that context. Like, things are brighter. They're about to get brighter, but that's what I was asking.
They're not. I mean, the irony is that we're even more in debt. The government's book shows that we're even more in the red than expected. So, yeah, OCR going down, good, but it ain't a rosy picture. But I'm going to have to be rude, Paul, into the panel.
Off you go. Yeah, you got a show to do. Thank you, Simon. In fact, we're pretty well at the point of wrapping it up anyway. So let's get into some final words. Elliot, anything you want to say before we're done on our political panel?
Yeah, bloody awesome. Just in terms of the OCR, I think it is a pragmatic good, but the books are looking really, really bad. I don't think there was any surprise at all when they opened up the books and showed us how bad things were. And that is, of course, directly on the shoulders of the most incompetent government that New Zealand has ever had, which was the 2017 to 2023 Labour Ardern government. So in terms of the OCR doing what it does, I don't think anyone was surprised. It was one of the few times that economists across the board got it right, most of them. And yeah, it's good. I mean, yeah, our house is coming up for the fixed or the mixed term rate coming up. So yeah, we're happy. Others are happy, and some of the ones savings not so happy. So
she's happy. She's getting $300,000 a speech. Helen.
Oh, she is.
Yeah. Look, you know, I get really fed up with hearing the flack that this government do get around fixing the books. I mean, that's a fairy tale, you know. Like you said, it's really bad, like really, really bad. And we're all paying for it. Of course, it's a good thing to drop the OCR. I mean, sometimes I think it's a bit of hot air because the last time we dropped, I was expecting a massive drop in the huge, huge amount of mortgage. My fees are, and it dropped by like $20. And I'm like, blinker, yeah, can I curse on here? So yeah, you know, hot air, like I need, and lots of other people out there that are suffering. It's really tough. I won't go into the dramas of my life, but yeah, you know, it's tough out there. So I feel for everybody out there, and we need relief. You know, it's not our fault that the last government screwed our country. We shouldn't all be paying for it forever, but yeah, that's what I like, bring her back and get some money. But yeah, that's all good.
All right. Well, we'll call time on this political panel for this Friday. I want to thank Elliot Ikile for coming in. Thank you, Elliot. Good to have you. We'll have you back again. Cheers. For sure.
Awesome.
And Helen, thanks for coming in again so quickly. We appreciate that. You going to say anything?
Oh, sorry. I thought you'd gone. I was actually just, I've got exams in 3 weeks. So I was studying, so a bit at short notice, but I love being on here. So I'll come back anytime. Thanks, Paul.
That's cool. And of course, we had Simon O'Connor who had to flick off because he's off to do his show, Speak Free, shortly. Thanks, folks. We'll do it again in a week.
Wonderful.
Done. Thank you. I'll sort that out and we'll be good. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, let's go.
I'll see you next week.
Yeah, see, yeah, see you next week. Yeah. See you all next week. Yeah.
See ya.
All right, bye.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.